Oh, good evening, everybody. My heart is full of love to you. And it goes hand in hand with deep appreciation, really. I mean, I know at times it feels as if we've been thrown into this washing machine and someone maybe forgot to press the stop. Some of you do look that way. I feel I do sometimes. So just taking a deep breath, starting again, starting fresh, starting anew. Putting aside, behind us, all the past moments. Putting aside all the speculations for maybe what's going to happen next. And happily sitting in the here and now. I had the great fortune to receive an email from Stephen, a beloved friend and teacher, the founder of Tovana. I shared it with Christopher. Apparently, he told me he was just in Switzerland and met this teacher from the Maya tradition. You understand Maya? Mm-hmm. And he said to him that the word lila is also in Maya language and means here and now. Wow. Isn't it a wow? I mean, I didn't do anything to deserve it, thank you. But still, it's nice. So, here and now. And I wanted to share some reflections with you around the topic and hopefully also inside the topic of inner authority, finding the voice of truth. And please note, I did not choose the words, finding our true voice. Deliberately. Finding the voice of truth. Sometimes, we take a good look inwardly, and all of you are quite familiar with this odd hobby of meditation, and it just happens like that. We can notice maybe quite quickly this cacophony. You know this word? Cacophonia.
Opposite from harmony.
Yeah, opposite from harmony of many, many voices inside of us. And many sentences that sometimes really clashes together. Should I stay or should I go? Might be an option. Should I get up now from the meditation cushion and do something useful with my life? Or should I stop doing so much and maybe start to explore how to be a human being? And these are the easier questions. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it feels like it's a structure inside. This or that? Where is the right answer? We're really searching for to have it right. To do it right. And it can lead to a lot of misery because there's a good chance we are searching in the wrong place. Interestingly enough, in the act of searching itself, there's the proof of something interesting and deep. We genuinely want to know what would be the good thing to do. But where is this question coming from? Sometimes we will find ourselves jumping into conclusions about somebody else, about the world, about ourselves. And we will waste hours and days and weeks and months to persuade ourselves that this conclusion is right. I'm doing the right thing. I know it is not a Buddhist retreat, but one of my main sources of inspiration is the Buddha. And you know, we can also refer to this figure as a myth, let alone the historical guy that lived there, not our guy, another guy, that lived in India 2,600 years ago, and the history, but also as a mythological creature. He went through something quite interesting in the search of some answers. And as some of you may know the story, he was searching and searching and searching and searching to find the cure, suffering, the liberation from suffering. And he went and sat with the best teachers of his time. And every time, and it happened again and again, these teachers told him, wow, you're ripe enough. You can join us and teach with us. And he declined. Why did he decline? Why did he say no? He looked inside, that's the report. He says himself, I am not yet there. I have not yet found what I was looking for. And mind you, he left the palace, another myth, you know, the life of the luxury, life of Riley. Really, really, I mean, everything you can imagine and not imagine, he had it. And he left that. He didn't find what he was looking for there. And he finally became an ascetic, wandering monk. So when he came to the point after many years of practice, 6 years to begin with, a lot of austerities, practices of really, really severe not eating or eating one grain of rice per day and so forth. And still, he could not find what he was looking for. Can you imagine the despair? Leaving everything behind. He left a wife, a child, a future, a safe future. For something that deep inside told him, maybe, there ought to be another way. Must be more to life than this. And maybe sometimes we have the same feeling, the same understanding, the same thought. What is it that we're looking for? Sometimes we don't really know, but we know what we don't want. This lifestyle, enough. Enough of it. And we are taking a step outside of our comfort zone, so to speak, to find ourselves oftentimes in an abyss. Understand this word? The home. Not here, not yet there. We left the old and we are not yet found what we are looking for. What will be our guide? What can we rely upon? In his case, this guy, Gotama, it seems like he had really deep integrity. He kept the inner look, he kept looking inside and noticing, no, this is yet still not what I am looking for. I'm still not liberated, as I know I can be. How did he know? What did he trust? And you know, when you live the life of the luxury and you become a wandering monk, you don't have much. Maybe your bowl, your robe, your flip-flops, if you're lucky, or barefoot is or is in Bangkok, not even that. But still, you know, we as human beings can develop very quickly attachment to just about everything, even to just one robe that we have. And sometimes we have just, you know, very small things, and we still, they're very meaningful to us, and sometimes we get hooked on them as well. And Gautama, Siddhartha Gautama, had then five friends who he practiced with together. And they really, you know, respected him because he was the foremost to practice this kind of austerities. But still he was not satisfied, and he looked deep inside. And something very wonderful and odd happened, according to the text. All of a sudden, a memory came to him, a memory of himself as a young boy, sitting under a rose apple tree. I think I told one of the groups that for years I thought this was a myth. There's no such a tree. Rose, apple, what's the connection? And then I found it. I found this tree and I planted it. I'm quite happy to have this little bush where I live. Sort of every day when I pass by it, it reminds me, rose apple tree. There's still a chance. Yeah, I know. It's a weird kind of tree. And you're all welcome, by the way, to come and sit under it. Well, now it's a bush. I still have hope. Anyway, he remembered himself as a young boy sitting under this tree. His father was busy with the celebration of the harvest, and he was left alone and, you know, crossed his legs and went into deep meditation and experienced very sweet and deep states of mind. And something in this memory triggered something in him. When he was really thin and weak already from years of practicing in austerities, and something in his mind clicked, and a thought came to him. That's in the text. And he says, the thought says, maybe this is the direction that I was looking for. I was looking at the wrong direction all the time, under the wrong light, in the wrong place, maybe. So he took the decision, rather received the decision, and took a bowl of delicious rice pudding from a young woman that passed by, was strong enough after he ate to walk some distance and to sit under another tree, some kind of ficus that now gained the name Bodhi tree. And the rest is history. Understood, saw and understood and got liberated. But when he did that, and after many days, you know, the text talks about 40 days, and it's another mythical number, interesting, that comes back in different stories. He came back to meet his friends, and they, meantime, they knew he took some food, and they really felt contempt towards him. You understand this word? They really did appreciate what he did because he sort of broke their rules of being really, you know, austere and ascetic. And they told one another, here comes the recluse, Gautama. Let's not greet him. Maybe he knew that before. Can you imagine? You have nothing. You gave up everything. You gave up everything you have. And maybe your only things that you have in this world are very, very few. And they include your five good friends that you practice with. And you know that if you will do something different than they expect you to do, they'll ban you. And ban. And he did it anyway. He did it anyway. What was the motivation? What was the force behind this action of taking a good deep look inside, noticing, hey, there's something missing. It's not exactly sitting right with me. I should do something about it. And I'm going to pay, maybe, a price for it. Maybe. I'll take this chance anyway, because there's something deeper that is moving me now. You know, as human beings on this earth, especially in those times, but I think it was probably like that over the centuries and over the different cultures, we are really being, in a way, programmed. We are poured like water, we are poured into different systems. Programmed or
molds.
Different modes, yeah, thank you. So it can start with the kindergarten and then school, and then sometimes in some cultures, high school, sometimes in some cultures, army. Looks very normal, huh? Sometimes in some cultures, university, and then marriage, and then love and marriage, you know, kids, and then what, and then what? And then we can find ourselves, after this race through the different modes, adjusting to different modes, with a big question mark. What am I going to do with my life? And this is a little bit unfair, because we are not really given the tools, how could we, to even start to work with this question. If we've been programmed, excuse my language, and molded into the belief that this is the way it should be, and we will find our well-being and happiness only inside these structures, it's going to be quite different and quite difficult for us as people on this earth to even have the chance to think outside of the box. And when do we have this chance? When something happens to us and we find ourselves sometimes against our will, against our wish, thrown outside of the boxes. Marginalized. We have no chance then. We have to wake up to start asking the questions. Sometimes it's a painful journey to find the inner authority. It really feels sometimes unfair. It feels like it, even though it's not a feeling, it's a thought. This is unfair. How to work with this body-mind organism? How to make the right choices? I've been told what to do morning, noon, and night. I've been molded into these different structures. And sometimes we feel we had no other choice than to buy into it until something different happens. What will help us as human beings to wake up in the midst of that and start asking the right questions? Sometimes I see, especially in the recent years, parents asking the children for their opinion, for their views. This is really beautiful. I've been told. Good. Thank you. So, with your permission, I continue. I've been told that once upon a time in England, maybe Christopher can affirm that, there used to be this sentence running around in certain circles that children should be seen, not heard. Is that right? Oh,
yeah.
A little bit of that wouldn't hurt the Israeli society, if I might say. Just a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And sometimes we find the opposite view. And parents tend to ask their children, even if they just began to speak, let alone not talking, what do you want now? What do you want to eat? What do you want to drink? What do you want to wear? Hey, the kid doesn't even know to say, Mama. What do you want? And it's a beautiful act of trying to help the child to develop his or her will. But oftentimes, it can and it may land on the premise that what I want is actually who I am. And oftentimes, what we want is the delicious, the tasty, the nice, the pleasant. And obviously, what we don't want is all the opposite. And we find ourselves in this pendulum swing that we all know too well, because again, we've been molded that way. We've been programmed that way. And you know the culture of, in Hebrew we call it Bali. I feel like, or how do you translate Bali?
Yeah, feel like.
I feel like children, maybe that's the first sentence they learn how to say. I feel like that. I feel like this. Meaning, I want that. I want this. I feel like that. I feel like this. I want to have it. I want to grab it. And instead of that, I really like this opposite sentence. I learned it from my partner. Instead of ma bali, ma ba elai. I try to translate. Instead of what I feel like that, what comes to me? Well, in Hebrew, it's a game of words. It's a pun. So it's not really translatable. But instead of go and fish what I feel like because it's pleasant, and identify myself with that side of the spectrum. I only want what is nice, pleasant, and I have a very firm, strong will about it. I'm receiving what comes to me. When we talk about our inner authority, finding the voice of truth, what can guide us there? If we are willing to let go of the game, the endless game of Bali, of pleasant, and stay true to something else, that at times it can be just a whisper. Other times, it's a scream. There's a Cherokee proverb that says just this. If you don't hear the whisper, you will hear the scream. Sometimes the inner authority will take shape and form in the body or the speech or the mind. In meditation, what makes us get up and leave the cushion? How can we work with the negative voices inside of us? Sometimes people say, oh, just be with it. Just be with it. That's the essence of mindfulness. No, it's not. Definitely not. Sometimes, when the negative voices are quite loud in ourselves, when the inner judge is very strong and harsh, sometimes the worst tyrant is actually inside. And just to be with it will not be the right thing to do at that time. We actually need to say, No. Enough already. Thank you for sharing, but no, be creative. Say what you want, but stop it. And we can stop it. We are not victims of our minds. We are not victims of our upbringing. Even though we had the worst mama in the world, we are not victims of anybody and anything. And we can change our life like that when we are willing to let go of holding strongly to the view, this is who I am because of all the past circumstances, and this is who I am going to be from now on. That's it. Karma, the magic word. I've been told, beautiful sentence, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. Nice one, huh? Never too late to have a happy childhood. I personally really like this one. And even though we've been wronged in many ways, it doesn't go to say we are robbed forever from our strength, from our power, from our ability to change inwardly and outwardly. So in meditation, it's a clean example, working with the painful voices inside, simply saying no. And you know why I'm telling you this? Because I tried it and it worked. Not because I read it somewhere. Well, I did read it somewhere, so it gave me the inspiration, but I didn't believe it. So I tried it. And I suggest for you to do the same. Please don't buy what I'm saying. Try it. Try it. That's the only way to know. And hand on heart, it was embarrassingly easy. I was really inspired by a book of a woman called Peace Pilgrim. She's no longer alive. Peace Pilgrim, that was her nickname. That's the name she went by. And she walked the planet, she walked the earth, she walked in America, in Alaska, for years. Maybe 30-something years. An amazing, incredible woman. You can find her small little booklets everywhere for free. You can Google her and find her. And she prepared herself for this walk. She walked for peace. She was a peace pilgrim, Tzelianit Shalom. It's even translated into Hebrew. And one of the things that she did was to work with her mind exactly in that way. And she says in this little booklet, just in the same way that I will not want to eat junk food because I know the consequences, I don't want to have junk thoughts. No junk thoughts. No, thank you. So many years ago, I was in India on a one-month retreat, and I was sick as a dog. You can only get so sick in India. You know, Delhi, 40-something degrees, maybe it was more, I don't know. Probably 8-something. Usually I'm quite careful in India, but there was, wow, big. Delhi, belly, you know this one? endless running to the toilet, fever, whatnot. I laid like this on my bed in the retreat, couldn't move, couldn't do anything. For days, I thought at one point, the thought came to me, I'm going to die. Really, I mean, it was like, wow, I might die. You know, it was in a faraway place. And anyway, so what could I do rather than practice? So I did, and I practiced with this one. Just a small little shift. No junk thoughts. That's all. And at the beginning, it was quite, you know, a struggle. But after some time, it became quite easy. And I'm really happy to share that. It became quite easy. And I even had the thought, feeling, idea, that the mind actually loves it. The mind actually loves to be clear and clean. There's some kind of deliciousness that is suffused in the being when the mind is clean and clear, just as in the body. So the love was there on both sides, and I was so happy. You know how sweet it is that our mind is just clean and clear. And it is not an act of will, mind you, although it might sound like that. It is not. It's an act of love. It's an act of wisdom. And it is not my wisdom. The self cannot take ownership over that. It would fade away quite quickly. It's something else, much more interesting, that does the movement. And maybe it's love reaching out for love. Maybe it's wisdom reaching out to wisdom. So our inner authority, knowing when to say no, simply no, because we know it's harmful for ourselves and to others. And it's in the inner world and equally in the outer world, using our good voices. Sometimes the right thing to do would be to not say anything. But we are in the midst of huge mess, people shouting at each other. Da, da, da. Maybe at times the right thing, the skillful, the wise thing to do is to keep very still. And our inner authority and the voice of truth will be manifested through our stillness. It's sitting like a mountain. Sometimes when all else falls apart, when everybody around us are hysteric, and we keep our calm, this is a huge act already. Other times, it will be our duty, dare I say, to listen to the voice of wisdom and love inside and to act and to say something and take the risk and take the chance. Sometimes it might feel like bungee jumping. Hand on heart, I never did it. I don't like these kind of things at all. But I'm quite familiar with the fear in my system when I'm doing something that is risky. Risky to the ego, risky to the body, risky to the heart. When I say something to someone and I don't know how well it will be received, and I feel maybe exposed. People spoke about being vulnerable. So it's not about waiting until we're ready, quite strong, we don't care about the consequences, and we just Hercules type. Yeah, no. Well, it will be nice, maybe, sometimes, to act from that place. But hey, please don't wait until you're so strong and fearless and act with the fear. Say it anyway. Some time ago, we have this neighbor, I live in this little village, and I don't know, it was around the time of elections, probably in Israel, and our neighbor, which we didn't have much contact with, stopped my partner on the way, he was coming home, and they start having this conversation about politics. And this neighbor said to Yoav, to my partner, "I hate all these leftists in Israel. I really can't stand them. They're so hypocrites. I'm right-wing, but not just right-wing, Kahana, you know, like the most extremist of the right wing. I really can't stand people who vote for Meretz, which is the left party in Israel. What did you vote? And you have my partner looked him in the eye, smiled and said, Meretz, of course. You know, not easy sometimes. Sometimes we wish to avoid, but can we find a way to speak our truth without allowing the voices outside of bullies sometimes, without fearing the risk of losing love of someone that we appreciate, like this neighbor? So the question that we really ought to ask ourselves is not what my inner voice tells me to do. Because oftentimes, A, we are not sure. B, there are too many inner voices at the same time fighting each other. C, whatever. Other thing. D, all of the above. But actually, what would be the more accurate question to ask? What would love do? What would friendship do? What would wisdom do? And do it. And act upon it. And celebrate it. With a fear, if we need. Sometimes we will be too scared from our own power. And we will mix, sometimes, our power, our strength, with violence. And this will be sort of the reason for us to not to step into our power. Maybe for some of us, being powerful means be aggressive. What is the difference for us? Or we've been brought up to be nice and polite. Can we still carry that voice of wisdom, of love, of truth, through thick and thin? As we say, it can be in a very small, soft whisper, and also in a strong voice. We are capable of all of this. We are all capable. All of us. All of us. Regardless of history, regardless of mothers, regardless anything else, we can have this direct connection with these qualities that can and will manifest in our hearts and our lives. I want to end with reading you out loud a quote by a wonderful woman called Marianne Williamson, spiritual activist, author, founder of Peace Organization. And she says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous, actually? Who are you not to be? Who are we not to be? Let us sit with these words together. May we find the courage and wisdom and love to act in this world. May we find the courage and wisdom and love to carry our act, regardless the confusion and the fear. May all of us find the voice of truth, of wisdom, of love inside of us as a guide.